All right, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to go through the Mishnah. We were discussing yesterday Yivama. How do we know that Bi'ah works as a vehicle of acquisition by the case of Yavam and Yivama? And now the dissolution of the Zikata Yibum, the Mishnah says that happens with Chalitza. The Gemara says, B'Chalitza Minalan. How do we know that Chalitza works? Dichtiv, because it says at the end of the Parsha of Chalitza, So the pasuk there, where it describes the process by which the chalitza is done, that pasuk or final pasuk is v'nikrash mo b'Yisrael beit chalutz hanal. And the way kevin shechalatz banal, once he does the chalitza with the shoe, hutra the chol Yisrael, she becomes muteret the chol Yisrael. You can see in Rashi hachi mashma. This is how you read it: b'Yisrael ru'uya lavi. The bayit mishichalta. So he rereads it, which is nikrash mo b'Yisrael beit chalutzanal. Maybe b'Yisrael bayit after chalutzanal. So if you reparse the pasuk, you end up that she can go back to her house, or she can go to any house in Israel once there is chalitzat hanal. Hay Yisrael lahachichu dato. That is what you use that word Yisrael for. B'hami bayit. We need that pasuk for something else, which could etani Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. The braita that was brought by Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Bisrael, bebeitin shel Yisrael. This could only be done in a Jewish beitin. Below bebeitin, here there is a question of the girsa. The girsa that we have in our gemaras is shel ovdei kochavim. The more likely girsa, you can see that in Mesorat HaShas, and the Bach is bebeitin shel gerim. Yisrael requires Yisrael by birth, and not gerim to be used. It's not to the exclusion of a non-Jewish court system, which would be obvious that you can't bring it before a non-Jewish court system. Forgetting Mishpatim, where we have the same dinim that you're not allowed to bring here. Here, these are halachot that are particular to the Jewish nation. Certainly, you can't bring those into a non-Jewish court. So therefore, they think that the more likely reading over here is that of Gerim rather than that of Ovdei Kochavim. Where it says, Trei Yisrael Tive. The word Yisrael appears twice there. And therefore, you can darshan from one Yisrael about the court, and from the other Yisrael, you can darshan that she is released or freed from the Yavam in order to be muteret to Shar Yisrael. The Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses that Gerim are precluded from certain cases or certain courts. They may not be participants in those courts. So we have precedent. We do have paradigms like that. And in either, you could say that it means a total beit din, mean here that the whole beit din can't be comprised of gerim, or maybe even a ger by himself can't be on a beit din of this sort. And so there are certain cases where gerim are excluded from being judges in cases. This would be one of those examples. That early in the pasuk it says, "Vaya b'chor shetiled yakum Hashem achiv amed v'lo yimachay shemo miYisrael." V'amra imein yivamid lakim lachiv shem biYisrael. You have the other Lakim Lachim Shem Bi Yisrael, to give him a name amongst Israel, even though the first two times Israel is talking more broadly about Israel rather than the court itself, whereas V'nikra Shmo Bi Yisrael is really in the context of the court case. Nevertheless, here the Gemara sees that there are two words Israel, and therefore they're able to darshan both. Gemara says, V'kati mi bailet. We have a third limud, Gerektanya. Am Rabbi Yehuda, Pamachat Ayinu Yoshvim Lifnei Rabbi Tarfon, Ubat Yivama Lachlotz. We had a case, we were learning in front of Rabbi Tarfon, and a Yivama came in front of us, and they performed Chalitza, V'amar lanu, and he instructed us, Anu kulchem v'amru, all of you that are present must answer, Chalutza now, Chalutza now. Why? Because it seems here it says, V'nikra shmo b'Yisrael. It's not just that the court has to call, anybody who's present, any Jew that is present, anybody of Israel must call him, Beit Chalutza now, Beit Chalutza now. How v'nikra shmo nafka? That way they don't learn out of Yisrael, but rather v'nikra shmo. So you don't need the Yisrael to include everyone. V'nikra shmo is an instruction that anybody who's present in the Beit Din at the time calls him a Beit Chalutz Anal. So we actually learn out three things from the word Yisrael. It actually appears three times in the Parshia, but nevertheless, the Gemara only learns from two of them, and it says here, the last case is learned out of v'nikra shmo rather than be Yisrael, and the Bisrael then is extraneous to teach us about the either the fact that she is then freed or released by this. And then the other, Yisrael, teaches us that it has to be a Beit Din Shel Yisrael and not a Beit Din Shel Gerim. Okay, next, Umimitata Yavam. The other way that the Yavama is released, one is Chalitza, the other one is the death of the Yavam. Minolon, how do we know that? Kal v'chomer. It's a logical extension. Ma ishet ish shehi bechenek, a married woman whose punishment, if she has an extramarital affair, is the death penalty. Mitat abal matirata, her husband passing away, which we spent time on yesterday, releases her. Yivama shehi belav, a yivama whose only restriction is lo tia ishet ameta chutza liishzar. So it's only a restriction of a lav, possibly of an assay as well, while she's waiting to be engaged with this individual. Shehizi belav lo kol shekein, that the death of the yavam should release her from that lav. That restriction against her going to an ish zar is only imposed by the yavam. So if you have a lav in one case, you have a mita in the other case. By the case of eshet ish, where it's mita, the death of the baal releases her, the death of the yavam should release her over here as well. Where it says, ma eshet ish, ken yotza beget. Wait a minute, eshet ish has a kula, which is that you're allowed to get divorced with a get. Tomar bezo, shein yotza beget. The case of Yivama, she doesn't have that ability to be released through a get. Anami yotza bechalitza. She has her tzad, where she has the vehicle for release, which is chalitza. Elamale eshet ish, ken osra matira. The one who is causing the problem is the one that releases her. The husband is the one she is bound to. The death of the husband is the one who releases her in this case. In the case of the Yivama, that's not necessarily the case, because the one who was oseret, the one who was oser her, was the original husband. The original brother who passed away was the one who created the Isur. And now you're asking the death of the brother, the Yavam, to release her. Amaravashi anami osra matira. No. You misunderstood that. Over here, it's the same thing. Yavam osra, Yavam sharila. The Yavam over here is releasing her because he is the one who's making her asura. Because as far as the original husband is concerned, he passed away. So he's subject to the same rules as any other married individual, which is his death releases his wife. So the zika, or the connection to the yavam, is what's maintaining the iser on this woman. And therefore here, it's the presence of the yavam that is causing her to be asura, because if there were no brothers, she'd go free right away. There would be no waiting for yibum. She wouldn't need any chalitza, no yibum. So therefore, the Yavam himself is what's causing that problem. So the Yavam's death should also release her, and therefore it's parallel to that of Eshet Ish. So Gemara says, okay, once you've established that, Utei Eshet Ish, Yotza B'chalitza, Mikal B'chomer. From a logical extension, we should be able to make it that a Eshet Ish, a married woman, should be able to use the vehicle of Chalitza to be released from her marriage. Umay Yavama, Sheinu Yotza B'get. Yavama, which cannot use a get to be released. Yotza bechalitza, she's able to get out of the zikata yibum through chalitza. Zo sheyatza beget, inudin sheyotza bechalitza. The married woman who has the vehicle of get certainly should have the vehicle of chalitza. Zamakra sefer kritut. We have from the pasuk which tells us v'katov la sefer kritut. So that sefer kritut, which is the document of dissolution of the marriage, the bill of divorce, sefer korta vein davar acher korta. Meaning that it's unique. Sefer Kritut is the only method by which the woman can be released. No other method can be used to release the woman. So that's her singular vehicle for dissolving the marriage, is a Sefer Kritut. So Gemara says, okay, then go the other way. Utei Yivama Yotza beget Mikal V'chomer. So make a logical extension the other way, that a Yivama should be able to use the vehicle of a get. Uma Eshet Ish She'en Yotza Bechalitza. Eshet Ish doesn't have the vehicle of chalitza yotza beget. Nevertheless, she can use a bill of divorce. Zoshi yotza bechalitza. The Yavama who has chalitza as a vehicle ain't dinch yotza beget. Certainly, she should be able to be released with a get. Tosfot asks over here, why would you make that leap of logic? Because you could argue that by a woman who gets married, a shtar is a vehicle for generating kiddushin. Therefore, a shtar is a vehicle for dissolution of that marriage. On the other hand, by Yavam or Yavama, that's not the case. They can't enter into the Yibum through a shtar, and therefore a shtar should not be a method by which they can dissolve the Yibum. So that would undermine the Kal V'chomer before it got off the ground. So you could look in the Bali HaTosafot, say, V'omer, Rabbeinu Meir, David Kal V'chomer mi Yavam v'Yivimto. The Kal V'chomer is not from an Isha, but rather from a Yavam and Yavama. Because it says in the Parshia of Yavama, that if the Yavam takes her as a wife, lakach lo liisha, and we know once the Yavam performs Yibum with the Yavama, they become fully married, and the dissolution of that marriage afterwards will require a get. So you see there that get works for a Yavam and Yavama who cannot enter their marriage through Shtar. They can only enter their marriage through Biah. And yet a get is still a vehicle for dissolution. So maybe here too, while they are waiting before, the Zika that you boom should also be able to be dissolved through a get. Again, you could argue on that answer of Tosafot and say that the Kiddushin generated by the first brother are what bind them, and that's why they don't need a Shtar, and why a get dissolves the marriage is because it's relying on the original Kiddushin. But he says that because the Yibum process cannot be done through a Shtar yet, a get is still good enough to dissolve the marriage. Therefore, that's the Kal v'chomer that the Gemara is proposing at this time. Amakra kacha. The Pasuk says kacha, which the Gemara here is reading v'kacha l'ikuva. The kacha means that these are the only ways to do it and no other way. So we have that in other places. We're going to see in a second with regards to Yom HaKippurim that certain words in the Torah are words that the Gemara is saying me'akev, which means that whatever is written in that parshia is absolutely necessary. It's not simply the chatchilo, and that's very true in Kodoshim. In Kodoshim, where something is written in the Torah, generally the rule is if it's written once, that means that it's only the chatchilo or the mitzvah. If it's written twice, it's the ikuv. Because then when the Torah repeated it, it says, not only is this the chatchila, that you should do it, but you must do it. That's why it's written a second way, and this is the only way it works. So sometimes we don't have it written twice, but we make up for that deficit in having a word in the parsha that indicates that this is absolutely necessary, or this is the only way to perform it. So the word chok is used by the Gemara in many places to indicate that that's the ikuv. Chok, which means this is the law, this is the way it's done, and there's no other way to do it. So to otacha, kacha, we've seen these words before, but these are types of words that say it must be done this way and no other way. So over here we had it in the Megillah yesterday, but we also have it in the Parshia of Chalitzav, Nikshay Yivim Toi Lav Le'nei Azakenim, V'chaltza Na'alo Mi'al Raglo V'yarka B'fanav, V'antav V'amra, kacha Yaseh Le'ish Asher Lo Yivned Beit Achiv. So kacha, this is the only way to have the release of the Yivama. There is no other way to gain release. You're suggesting here that when you have the word kacha, not only does it mean that what is found in the parshia is the ikuv, meaning you must do it this way and no other way, but now you're telling me that it's exclusive, which means that only that which is found in the parshia can be used, nothing else can be used. Generally, we look at a word or an ikuv as being a method or a vehicle for saying whatever is written here is mi'akev. But that doesn't stop you from either using a gzeirah shavah or a kal v'chomer to bring in other methods or vehicles or mechanisms into the parshia. And that's what you're suggesting over here. Baha Yom HaKippurim. And so the Gemara brings an example where we have something that's the ikuv, and yet we still learn a kal v'chomer. Dichtiv, goral v'chuka. In the parshia of Achrei Mot, when it discusses the avodah of Yom HaKippurim, it says the means by which you determine the shnei seirim, which one is seir l'Hashem. And which one is the Seir Lazazel? You do that al yedei ha-goral, through the lottery. V'chuka, at the end of the parsha, there it uses the term chok, and therefore the Gemara learns from that that it's ma'akev, that chol avodat yom ha-kippurim, or seder avodat yom ha-kippurim is ma'akev. Everything has to be done exactly like it is in the parsha. If you skip anything, you do it out of order, it is problematic. So now we have an ikuv, and we have a limud of goral, and now you have a braita, v'tanya. Basau chatat. So it says there, when you draw the lots from the goral, that makes it into a chatat. Ha-goral osa chatat, and Hashem osa chatat. The goral, the lottery, is able to determine the purpose of the seirim, designating one as chatat l'Hashem and one as l'Azazel, but you cannot just call them. You can't just say that this one's l'Hashem and this one's l'Azazel. That will have no bearing. Sheyachol. Wait a minute, why wouldn't you say that? Balo dinu, isn't it a kal v'chomer? It's a logical, again, extension. Because, b'makom shlo kidesh ha-goral, in cases where the lottery is not the methodology by which you can create the kedusha. For instance, the example that's brought here, Rashi notes it as well, is kinin. If you have two birds that you must bring for korbanot, one of them is a chatat, one of them is an olah. How do you determine whether which one's a chatat, which one's an olah? So you just say, you know what, I'll take a lottery. I'll pick out Takim, and I'll pick one will go to Chatat, one will go to Olah. Does not work. The only way you can generate a Kedusha on the birds is either Bishat Kniat Habal, when the owners buy them, they can designate them at that moment, or at the time that the Avodah of the Kohen is being done. When the Kohen is being Makriv them, he can also determine. in between, you can't change their title or you can't name them as an Olah or Chatat. But that means that the only vehicle for naming them is through your verbal expression that this one's an Olah and this one's a Chatat. Goral, a lottery, will never work in that case. So Kiddush Hashem. So over there, you're allowed to create a shame, whether it's the Chatat or the Olah. Makom Shekidesh HaGural, over here by Yom HaKippurim, where the lottery works, and Udin Shekidesh HaShem, certainly calling them verbally, the name should work. If Goral works, then certainly the naming of them as Lashem and Lazazel should work. Tamalor Vasau Chatat. So there we have, the Pasuk specifically says that you make it into a Chatat. How do you make it into a Chatat? HaGural Usa Chatat, Vein HaShem Usa Chatat. It's a miut. The miut says that this is the way, or this is the method by which it becomes a Chatat Lashem. There is no other way to do that. So there's a specific preclusion from using the calling of it as a chatat or an azazel, but you have to use the goral. V'taima dimeatate kram. The only reason we say that is because you have a miut in the pasuk. Had it not been for the miut in the pasuk, halav hachi darshin and kal v'chomer, we would have been happy to be doresh that kal v'chomer, despite the fact, afakav dichtibei chukah. Even though the word chok appears in the parshia in Achrimot of Yom HaKippurim, so you see there it's me'akev, but we still allow you to bring in other methods. Again, what the Gemara is saying here is that the word chok or chukah only affects the items that are written in the parsha to say that they are me'akev. It does not prevent you or preclude you from bringing in other methodologies. And if you bring in those other methodologies, they'll be subject to the chok as well. But still, you can bring them in. So why by Yivama do you not say the same thing? Just like by Ishidish, a get works. We should say by Yivama that a get works as well. She has Chalitza that works. Then if Chalitza works, certainly a get should work. So Mar says, Amakra, La. Pasuk says, La. La, Valoli Yivama. So it says there, Bekat of La, Sefer Kritut. So the La there is an Ikuv, which teaches you that this is the only person who can use a bill of divorce in order to dissolve the marriage. No one else can use a bill of divorce, because it says v'katav la, uniquely this person, not la in the narrow sense, that this woman, but rather la in the more generic sense, which is only a married woman can use a get. No one else can use a get, because v'katav la, sefer kvitut. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, v'eim Allah lishma, didn't we already use this to teach us all through Masechet Gittin? The chot of la. La means to this woman in particular, meaning the more particular woman, not in the more generic sense of la. Tre la ktive. The word la appears twice in the parsha, and therefore you can use it. Therefore we have two limudim. One limud will be la lishma. The other limud will be la valole yivama. That's because it says in the parsha, ki kach ish isha. And in that first scenario, it says, "Vayayin totza chen beinav kimatza bervatavar v'katav la sefer kritut v'natam v'yadav shucha mibeito." Then it says, "V'yatza mibeito." That's the v'halcha v'hayta l'ishacher. That's the hekesh that we've been learning all along. V'yatza v'hayta. There's a connection with divorce and marriage. In the second marriage, it says, "Usneya ishacharon v'katav la sefer kritut v'natam v'yada." So there are two times in the parsha it says v'katav la. One for the first marriage, the dissolution of the first marriage, and katav la again in the dissolution of the second marriage. So you have the word la ktivi twice. Where it says v'katami baile, we still need that second law for something else, which is chad la lishma v'idach la v'lo la ulechaverta. That we learned back in the end of Gittin, that when it says la, it comes to say that uniquely this woman can be divorced with the get and not her and another woman. I mean that their divorce or the get can only function to dissolve one marriage. It cannot dissolve multiple marriages, whether he has two wives with the same name or whether he writes both wives into the single get. Neither of those will work because a get is only good enough to divorce a single party or dissolve a single relationship. It cannot be used to dissolve multiple relationships. So El Omar Kra, the pasuk says here, by the case of Chalitza, now. So over here by us, it uses the term now, which is now in Midi Achrina No. That the only vehicle for breaking the Zikata Yibum is through now. It's through the methodology or the mechanism of the shoe. Without the mechanism of the shoe, you cannot dissolve it. Where it says, V'hai now l'hachi hudata? Is that what you're going to use the word now for? Hami bayile the ketitanyo. We need that for what's written in the Braita and Yevamot. Na'alo. Ein li ela na'alo. Sounds like you have to use his shoe. Na'al shel kol adam minole. How do I know that it doesn't have to be his shoe in particular? It just can be any shoe that he uses for this process of the chalitza. Because it says over here, v'chalitza na'alo mi'al raglo. So it makes it sound like na'alo is his now. Tamalomar na'al. The pasuk says, v'nikrashmo be'Yisrael, beit chalitza na'al. So over there, it doesn't say na'alo. It says na'al. So there it sounds like the more generic shoe rather than his particular shoe. So tamalor na'al, na'al ribo. That comes to include other shoes. Imkain, ma tamalomar na'alo. Then why does the pasuk beforehand, when it's describing the process, say, v'chalitza na'alo mi'al raglo, she'll take his shoe. His shoe seems to indicate it's got to be his shoe. So na'alo hara'ui lo. That comes to teach you that no matter which shoe you use, it doesn't have to be his shoe, it can be any shoe, still has to be a shoe that fits. You can't have a shoe that doesn't fit. Prat, the gadol shein yochol alechbo, that the shoe is so big that he can't walk in the shoe. Or prat le katan shein chufe et rov raglo. Or it's too small by where it doesn't cover the majority of his foot. So the shoe has to be sized in such a manner that it's a shoe that he could utilize. If he can't utilize the shoe, then even though it can be any shoe or a generic shoe, still has to have some connection to him. That's what Na'alo teaches you. So it doesn't have to be his in particular, but it has to be a shoe that fits the foot. And if it doesn't fit, then it's no good. What are those exclusions? If the shoe's too big, so he'll slip out of it, or the shoe is too small, by which it doesn't cover the rover's regel, prat, the mesulim. That is to exclude a case of misulim, she'ain lo ekev. Misulim, this is true in Hebrew. Many times in Hebrew, the verb that is used, it means almost the exact opposite of what you're saying. So for instance, in lesakel, lesakel means to stone in Hebrew. Although with the term when it's used with regards to a field, lesakel means to remove the stones from the field. So over here also, here it means the misulim. Misulim is from the word, as Rashi says, sole or sola, from the sole of the shoe. So misulim, shein lo ekev. It's a case here where they are missing the sole. Part of the sole is missing. What's that? The part that's under the heel. So if they do not have a proper heel, then they're also not considered to be a shoe because it doesn't cover the majority of his foot. His foot is extending out of the back of the shoe because his foot is too big for the shoe. And therefore he has no sole under his heel. So that's an exclusion of the case of na'alo. Imkei nichtov rukra na'al. So that's, the puzzle should have just said, beit chalutz na'al. Mai ha na'al. So that's shmamina tarte, that you can learn two things out of that. One is that any na'al will work. It doesn't have to be a shoe in particular. And the other one is that na'al is the only vehicle for dissolving the zikat ayibum. Get will not be a proper vehicle, even though you might have learned it out of a kal v'chomer. We have a specific miut that says that that is not the case. All right, so with that we complete the first mishnah, which discussed the methods of kinyan and dissolution that are associated with kiddushin. Now the Gemara moves over to Eved Ivri, and then we'll eventually move over to other Kinyanim, including Eved Kinani and other methods of Kinyan. So here, Eved Ivri, we are going to learn about the Kinyanim, and again, if the structure of the Mishnah is very similar to the structure of the Mishnah by Kiddushin, which is there are certain methods or means by which an individual can enter into the institution of being an Eved Ivri, and there's certain methods by which they can exit the institution of Eved Ivri, similar to what we did with an Isha. There are certain ways or methods by which the woman can enter into Kiddushin, and there are certain ways that she can exit from that institution of marriage. So it says here, the Mishnah says, Eved Ivri nikne b'kesef u'bishtar. So obviously, it's leaving out the word biyah, but similar to the woman, that there are two methods by which an Eved Ivri can enslave himself, which is either kesef, through being purchased, ubishtar, or through a document that places him into that position. Vikoneatzmo, bishtanim, ubiyovel, ubigiron kesef. He's able to reacquire his emancipation in three methodologies. One is shanim, is years, which is se shanim tavod, ubashvi, itse de chovshi chinam, in the seventh year he goes free. So he works for 6 years, and then the seventh year he's freed. Biyovel. If the yovel comes into place before the expiry of his 6 years, the yovel will release him. And the last methodology is giron kesef, which is the ability to buy his way out. If he's able to afford purchasing his way out, then he can do that. Giron kesef is the way that it's described because he was purchased for a certain price by the master. Then, after the master purchased him at that price, what we do is we divide that price by the number of years that he's going to be enslaved to this individual. That means that every year that he works there is worth a certain amount of money. So if he works there for 3 years, then you'll cut the purchase price in half, and he should be able to buy himself out for half of the purchase price. And that's what it means, giron kesef. His ability to have a defeasance of the purchase price, and then buy his freedom for the remaining time that he's there. That's called giron kesef. Yeter alav amaha ivriya. The amaha ivriya, which is the woman who enters herself in to be an amaha ivriya, shekoneh et atzma b'simanim. She has one more method of being released from that bondage, which is if she comes of age, which we saw earlier already in the Masechta, that if she reaches the age of puberty while she's in being an amaha ivriya, then she automatically is released. Hanirza nikne beritzia. Nirtza is an Eved Ivri, after his working of 6 years, decides he does not want to go free, and he prefers to remain with his master. So then the process by which he remains enslaved after that point in time is called Nirtza, where they pierce his ear. So that is the only mechanism or vehicle by which to extend his enslavement is through being Nirtza, the process of Nirtza. That's what the Torah prescribes. On the other hand, how does he gain his freedom then, once he is an Eved that is Nirtza? So there are two possibilities. One is that he bumps into the Yovel. The Yovel releases him. That's when all the Avadim go back to their original status, original positions. The other one is if his master passes away. If his owner passes away, he, unlike an Eved Knani, is not property of the estate. When you're property of the estate, then you are passed by Yerusha. But over here, because he's not property of the estate, the owner only owns him not as property, not as full ownership, but simply for his output. He owns a leasehold in this individual. And that leasehold is gone once he passes away. You do not pass that by Yerusha. Again, the Gemara will discuss that, where what we're speaking about, and whether this is completely true. There are exceptions to this rule. There are times where he is passing Yerusha, because if you have a lease on a certain property, just because the person dies doesn't mean the lease goes away. The lease can also, or responsibility for the lease can be passed to the next generation. Similarly over here, if he has a leasehold in this Eved Ivri, that should be able to be passed to the next generation. Again, they won't pass it as property, they'll just pass it as an ownership right in the output of the Eved Ivri. So now, in terms of the Eved Ivri, there are three parshiot in the Torah to describe the, we call it the plight, or the halachot that relate to an Eved Ivri. We had in one that we've been quoting until now, is the parshia of Amaha Ivriya. So in the case of an Amaha Ivriya, joined together in the parshia of Amaha Ivriya and parshia Mishpatim, is also the parshia, or parshia of Eved Ivri. So that's one place where we have Eved Ivri mentioned. The other place that we have Eved Ivri mentioned is in Sefer Devarim. In Sefer Devarim, there it talks about an Eved Ivri or Ivriya. And over there, there are certain laws that are prescribed for an Eved Ivri and Ivriya. And the third place we have it is at the end of Sefer Vayikra, where it describes someone who has fallen on hard times and has to sell themselves into slavery in order to get out of these difficult predicaments. So over there it talks about selling himself to another Jew. And then also talks about him selling himself to a non-Jew. So those are the parshiot of Eved Ivri. Again, spread across three different locations. In each of those locations, there are different halachot that are mentioned with regards to an Eved Ivri. And the question is, what is the relationship between the parshiot? Because it seems if they're spread out or they're not all together, maybe certain laws only apply to certain circumstances or instances. The reason for that is because for an Amaha Ivriya, it's pretty straightforward. Her father can sell her to be an Amaha Ivriya while she is a ktana, and then she goes free when she reaches the age of puberty, or if her master marries her, or a son of the master marries her. So that's the Amaha Ivriya is a very straightforward scenario, because there's only one scenario in which she can become an Amaha Ivriya. On the other hand, by an Eved Ivri, there are two scenarios how he can become an Eved Ivri. One is that he voluntarily sells himself into slavery. We put voluntary in quotes because he can't voluntarily sell himself in, but obviously most times when he sells himself into slavery, it's because he's compelled to do so because of outstanding debts or other problems that he has that he needs to sell himself into slavery to raise money or to raise capital. On the other hand, there is also a second vehicle for ending up as an Eved Ivri is when Beit Din sells him into slavery. And that happens when he is a thief, Well, he does something where he owes money and he's unable to make payment on the obligations that he has. There, Beit Din is empowered to sell him in as an Eved Ivri in order to pay off those debts or outstanding obligations that he has. So therefore, there are actually two types of Eved Ivri. And what we're going to see now in the Gemara is the possibility that certain laws only apply to an Eved Ivri who sells himself in, and certain laws only apply to an Eved Ivri that is sold by Beit Din. And you could segregate or separate the laws depending on which parsha. In Sefer Vayikra, when it describes it, it says, so there's a case where he's selling himself in because he's fallen on hard times, right? On the other hand, in Parsha Sefer Devarim, where it's written, it says, ki imacher lecha achicha, ha-ivri o ivriya. So when a Eved Ivri is sold to you, imacher is the passive verb, wasn't he sold himself? He was sold to you. Who sold him to you? Was the Beit Din that sold him to you. So therefore, maybe there's a difference in halachot that appear in Devarim versus Vayikra, and in Shmot, where there it's not even described how the Eved Ivri ends up in the position of being an Eved Ivri, because there it just says, ki tikna Eved Ivri, when you purchase an Eved Ivri. So there it's from the perspective of the buyer or the Adon, not from the perspective of the Eved. It doesn't tell you how the Eved was sold to him, it just says he purchased. In either of the cases, whether it's in Beit Din or if he sells himself, the purchaser is the purchaser of the Eved. So for that reason, the Gemara here is going to discuss those halachot. There is Gzeira Shava that brings them together, but not everybody learns that Gzeira Shava. So for that reason, the Gemara is going to ask questions that are separating or differentiating between these parshiot. It says, Eved Ivri nikneh b'kesef minoan. How do you know that an Eved Ivri can be acquired through a monetary acquisition? Amar kra mikesef miknato. Because it says there that he, from the monies of his purchase, Lamed shenikneh b'kesef. So you can see that that's already in Sefer Vayikra. So if he wants to be redeemed from being sold into slavery, it says that if in a case where he sells himself out to a non-Jew, im od rabot bashanim, he still has many years left until the Yovel where he would otherwise go free, lefihem yashiv ge'ulato, based on the number of years remaining in his enslavement, he will have to pay for his freedom or buy him out. Here it's other parties that are buying him out. Mikesef miknato, from the purchase price. So basically this is what we discussed before, that the way to buy oneself out is to defease the purchase price over the life of the enslavement, and to say that whatever amount of time is left, mikesef miknato, from the purchase price, that's what will free him. Well, if it's from the purchase price, that means that how did he end up in this position? Because of a purchase price. There was money that was traded in order to bring him into this position. That's what the Gemara says. How do we know that an Eved Ivri is nikneh b'kesef? Is because mikesef miknato. Lameid shenikneh b'kesef. Ashkechan Eved Ivri anim karlo oveid ko chavim. That's Parshiyah talking about a case where he sells himself to a non-Jew. Ho v'cho kinyano b'kesef. Because a non-Jew can only establish a kinyan through kesef. As Rashi points out over here, that the vehicle for acquisition of a non-Jew is kesef, and there is no other vehicle, because kinyan mishicha, or other kinyanim, specifically say, ma'amitecha, miyad amitecha, from your friend, or your brother. Those are obviously references to people within Klal Yisrael. And therefore, those are not vehicles that can be used by non-Jews. And therefore, the only vehicle for acquisition is kesef. So maybe the reason that an Eved Ivri is acquired through kesef, in that case, when he sells himself to a non-Jew, is because that's the only vehicle that a non-Jew could use anyway. His form of kinyan, or his method of kinyan, is kesef. Tosafot over here makes note of the fact that Rashi's assumption that a goy does not have a kinyan mishicha is only aliba deresh lokish in the Gemara and Baba Metzia. But according to the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, even a goy has a din of kinyan mishicha. And therefore what Rashi is saying here is not true, that the only vehicle for acquisition of by a goy is a kinyan kesef, because a kinyan mishicha does work according to Rabbi Yochanan. And so what the Rabbeinu Tam explains over here is that by the case of the Eved Ivri, that's his only method of acquisition. Because by an Eved Ivri, kinyan mishicha is not valid or irrelevant. Because you don't do a kinyan mishicha on a person or on an Eved, you do that on an animal or another object. So kinyan mishicha is not relevant. Kinyan Bishtar is learnt out from Kiddushin of an Isha, which again is a parshiyah that is relevant only by Jews and not by non-Jews. And so therefore, shtar is not the vehicle. The only method left for the non-Jew to acquire the Eved Ivri is kesef. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. The Gemara is not saying in general the only vehicle of acquisition is kesef for a goy, but rather in the case of acquiring an Eved Ivri, that is the only methodology of acquisition. So he narrows the scope of the statement of the Gemara that kinyan mishicha is only not applicable here, or other kinyanim are not applicable here. But in other instances, maybe there are kinyanim that a goy can use. As opposed to Rashi, who thinks this is more of a global statement, which is difficult, but he says that a goy has no other method acquisition besides kesef. This actually comes up, we're approaching Pesach, with regards to mechirat chametz. What is the vehicle by which you sell the chametz to the goy? Which kinyanim work? And over there, they do multiple forms of kinyanim in order to ensure that they do a kinyan that works with the goy, because the Rishonim argue about which kinyanim are relevant by non-Jews, as opposed to kinyanim between Jew and Jew. Nimkar l'Yisrael minolon. How do you know that if he sold to a Jew, that the same restrictions would apply? Amakra v'efteh lo nifdata. Because they have yet to be redeemed. So that is in the parsha of the Ama ha'ivriyah. Over there it says by the Ama ha'ivriyah that in the instance where it says imrana b'enei adunah asher lo ya'ada v'hevda. So it says there that, so the master does not want to marry this woman, ve'evda, then she can be redeemed. He can give it over to his son, or if he takes another wife, he has to treat her properly. And then, if he doesn't do any of these things, she goes, yetzachina mein kasif. So Gemara learns from havet there, melameit shemigaret pijona, ve'otza, that the ama ivriyah has the ability to redeem herself or buy herself out of her enslavement, and the same mechanism or method by which Eved Ivri does, the same way we mentioned before, which is the breaking down of the purchase price over the years that she will remain enslaved to this individual, and then Behefta, she can buy herself out, or the Adon can help her buy herself out by reducing the price by the number of years that she's worked. So that's the way Rashi explains it, that if there is a reduction of the purchase price in order to get out of this situation, then that shows you that the purchase price was the vehicle of acquisition. Many of the Rishonim, including Tosfot over here, don't like that explanation because that's not the pashtut of what is said in the Parshia. All the Parshia says is that she can redeem herself by buying herself out. It doesn't say that she is reducing the purchase price, simply that kesef works to release her. And so what most of the Rishonim suggest is that just like kesef works to release her, kesef must also work to bring her into that position as a giloy milta rather than a limud like Rashi is suggesting over here. So Gemara says, Ashrecha nama ivriya. With that we found by nama ivriya, what does that have to do with an eved ivri? Hoyo umikadesh bekesef, mikanya bekesef. Maybe over there it's unique to the position of an nama ivriya, because remember the monies that are used to purchase this girl from her father can also double as the monies for kiddushin. He can marry the woman, meaning the ama ivriya. The adon can marry the ama ivriya, or his son can marry the ama ivriya. And there, we'll see later on in the Gemara how it works exactly, but they double, the purchase price doubles as kesef kiddushin. So maybe an ama ivriya can be acquired through kesef because she can also be married through kesef. There's a reason to believe that that is a mechanism by ama ivriya that may not apply to an eved ivri. So Eved Ivri minalan, again, how do we know that Eved Ivri is true? Amakra, Pasuk says in Dvarim, Ki macher lecha achicha ivri, o ivriya, vavadcha sheshanim. Ki macher is a lashon of selling. Mekesh ivri, the ivriya. So there we have a hekesh between achicha ivri, o ha ivriya. That means when Eved Ivri and ama ivriya, we have a hekesh between them. And therefore, that hekesh will teach us that an Eved Ivri has the same methodologies or mechanisms as an ama ivriya. Just like an ama ivriya can be acquired through kesef, so too an eved ivri can be acquired through kesef. Ashkechan machrua beitin. Wait a minute, but that parshia in Devarim is talking about a case where beitim sold him into slavery, because there it says, ki imacher lecha. He was sold to you. Not that he sold himself to you, but the other parties, I mean the beitim sold him to you. So hove nimkar bal korcho. So there, the reason might be, is because he'd been sold against his will. So maybe the acquisition through kesef works because he's not a party to the transaction. But maybe where he's a party to the transaction, money would not suffice or not be a vehicle by which he can be acquired. Mocher atzmo minolon. How do I know when he sells himself that that works? Yalif, sachir, sachir. We have a gzeira shava of sachir, sachir. This is an important Gezeira Shava, because this connects the laws in these two parshiot. In Sefer Vayikra it says, Kisachir kitoshav iye imach. He will be like a sachir, a hired hand with you. And in the parshia, in Devarim, it says, Kimishne schar sachir avadcha shev shanim. He did double work for you during those 6 years. So the word sachir appears in both places, and what they're saying is a gzera shava of sachir sachir. In Sefer Vayikra, it's clear that he sold himself into slavery, because he fell on hard times, and then he sold himself into being an Eved Ivri. In the case of Devarim, it's a case where Beit Din sold him in, because it says, ki imacher lecha, he was sold to you. So now we have a gzera shava of sachir from Devarim to sachir in Vayikra, which says that the halachot will all be the same. That Eved Ivri, or the application of the halachot of Eved Ivri in those two locations will be similar. That's the way Rashi learns the Gzera Shava, although there are others that learn the Gzera Shava, that the word Sakhir appears in the case where the Jew sells himself to a non-Jew, that is the Gzera Shava here of Sakhir Sakhir. It says there, Vaya, Kesev Mimkoro Bisparshanim Kimei Sakhir Iyeimo. So they learn the Gzera Shava in that manner. You can see that in the Bali HaTosafot, who asks how come they don't make almost a three-way Gzera Shava, and therefore we could learn things out of the Parshia of a Jew selling himself to a non-Jew, and wouldn't need other limudim from those psukim over there. And therefore, some of the Rishonim ask, how come we can't learn out, like Kinyan Shtar, that works by an Eved Ivri in these other instances, we should be able to learn it over to the case of Eved Ivri that sells himself to a non-Jew. Tosfot in the end says, Eino Chanami, we could have had that Gezer Shava. Just the Gemara learns it from sometimes other words within the Parshia, if it has another limud, and doesn't necessarily use the Gezer Shava. Other Rishonim suggest that something inherently problematic with shtar, which is shtar is learned from kiddushin. Since kiddushin are not relevant by a non-Jew at all, Kenyan shtar cannot be learned from kiddushin and then extended over to the case of a non-Jew because he's not even shayach in the parsha of kiddushin. And therefore shtar, even if it's learned from there, cannot be utilized in the case of an Eved Ivri that sells himself to a non-Jew. I says, anicha l'manda yalif, sachir, sachir. That works well for those that learn the gzera shava of sachir, sachir. The one who does not learn that gzera shava, ma'ika l'meimar. What is the source for the fact that an Eved Ivri can be acquired through kesef when he sells himself voluntarily into enslavement? Amarkra v'chi tasig. If the goy has gained the upper hand, and he then is buying the Eved Ivri. That is the parsha that is immediately after Eved Ivri in Vayikra, where he sells himself to a Jew. The next question is where he sells himself to a non-Jew. It says, V'chi tasig yad gervet tushav imach. He gets the upper hand. Umach achicha imo. And your brother, meaning the Israel, the Eved Ivri, has gone fallen on difficult times. V'nimkar the gervet tushav imach. And then he sells himself to this gervet tushav, the eker mishpachet ager. So there's an instance where he is voluntarily selling himself to this non-Jew. In that case, we already established that when a Eved Ivri sells himself to a non-Jew, that works by kesef. Kesef works as the vehicle of kinyan, but only kesef works, true, but kesef works because of the method of redemption. The method of redemption was to reduce the purchase price, which means there was a purchase price. But it also has what's called a valv hachibur. The parshia there, which is subsequent to the parshia where he sells himself to a Jew, says v'chi tasig. V means mosif al inyan rishon. It's an extension of that which was there before. Meaning that we connect between the parshia above that, which discusses an Eved Ivri selling himself to another Jew. We connect that to the next parshia, which is speaking about a Jew selling himself to a non-Jew. And so just like by the case of selling himself to a non-Jew, kesef works, so too in the parshia above that, kesef will work as a vehicle. And here is where he voluntarily sells himself in. And now we have a source for the fact that an Eved Ivri can be acquired through kesef, even if he voluntarily sells himself into slavery. Tasig mosif al inyan rishon yomed el yon mitachton. The upper parshia, I mean the one beforehand, the one that talks about Eved Ivri selling himself to a Jew, will be learnt mitachton from the one below it, which is the parshia that discusses a Jew being sold to a non-Jew. We already established the fact that kesef works. Uman tana dolo yolif sachir sachir. Who is the tana that doesn't learn this gzeir shava? If you don't learn this gzeir shava, you're going to run yourself into problems, which is certain of the laws of Eved Ivri only are found in one of the two parshiot. If you don't learn the gzeir shava, how do you move those from one to the other? How do you get them between them? Gemara says, "Hai tana hu." This tana, the tanya. Here we have a braita. Mucher atzmo nimkar l'sheish v'yeter al sheish. Someone who sells himself into enslavement, into an Eved Ivri, he can sell himself for 6 years, or he can sell himself for more than 6 years. But, Machrua Beitin, Enunimkar Elo L'Sheish. On the other hand, if he's sold by Beit Din, he can only be sold for 6 years. So because by the Parshia in Devarim, where it says, Ki marcher lecha achicha, it says, Sheish Shanim. That Sheish Shanim is a limit that is only associated with Beit Din selling him into slavery. The Parshia in Vayikra, where he falls on hard times and sells himself in, has no limitation of 6 years. Which means that whatever you guys agree to, that is the duration of the enslavement. There is no cap of 6 years associated with someone who sells themselves into. And that's what it says here. Mocher etzmo, nimkar l'sheish, v'yeter l'sheish. Whatever the agreement is, he can sell himself in for 6 years or more than 6 years. Machrua beitin enu mkar l'sheish. But the parshian dvarim, which specifies sheish, that's why I'm on beitin. Beitin can only sell him for 6 years. Mocher etzmo enu nirtza. The one who sells himself voluntarily into being an Eved Ivri cannot have nirtza, cannot have the ritziah done to him to extend his stay until the Yovel. Machru Beitin nirtza. But on the other hand, if Beitin sells him in, then that can happen. Why? Because the parshiyah of ritziah is only mentioned in the cases that deal with Beitin, which is, that's in the parshiyah in Dvarim, which is clearly talking about Machru Beitin. It's also found in Mishpatim. But in Mishpatim, it's not clear there. All it says is the Adon is buying him. So there we have no indication. But what you'll do is then say that the Parshiyah in Shmot is also speaking like Dvarim about a case where Beit Din sold him because the laws are the same. You have the 6 year cap. You have Nirtza. They'll all be associated with the case where Beit Din sells him in. Mocher Atzmo Ein Manikim Lo. The case where he voluntarily sells him into slavery, then you don't have the requirement, which is mentioned in the Parshiyah in Dvarim, which is that when you free the Eved Ivri, after he's finished his work term with you, you have to actually give him a means to get on his own feet. You have to give him what's called Hanakah. You have to give him a gift, which allows him then to establish himself or reestablish himself in society. So that will only be true if Beit Din sold him into slavery, because that's the case in Parshiyah in Dvarim. So therefore, Mocher Atzmo Ein Manikin Lo, he doesn't get that benefit. Machru Beit Din Manikin Lo, but if Beit Din sold him, he does get that benefit. If he sells himself voluntarily into enslavement, his master cannot give him a shifcha knanit to produce children that will belong to the Adon. Now Rashi and the Rambam learn over here that that means that he is restricted from a shifcha knanit, that the Adon may not give him a shifcha knanit at all. On the other hand, Rishonim, like the Ritva, suggests that it's optional, meaning that in the case where Beit Din sells him, the Adon can compel him to marry the Shifcha Knanit. On the other hand, in the case where he sells himself into slavery, the Adon cannot compel him to marry the Shifcha Knanit, but if he so chooses, he could marry the Shifcha Knanit, and that would be the difference between them. Machrua Beit Din, in the case where Beit Din sells him in, Rabo Moser Lo Shifcha Knanit. In that case, he can have a Shifcha Knanit, because those are the cases where it mentions, I love my master, my wife, my kids. Those are all produced out of the situation or circumstance where he married a Shifcha Knanit. Those are only mentioned in the cases that involve Beit Din selling him in, not in the Parshiyah and Vayikra, which is talking about where he sold himself into slavery. Rabbi, now over here, the Girsa could be either Rabbi Elazar or Eliezer. The Tosafot on the next Amud discusses whether it's Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Elazar, and he favors it being Rabbi Elazar. So we'll read Rabbi Elazar Omer. Zeh v'zeh inu nimkar elo l'sheish. They're both capped out at 6 years. Zeh v'zeh nirtza. Both of them can make a decision to extend their enslavement from 6 years to the Yovel. V'zeh zeh manikim lo. And both of them, when you free them, you have to provide them with a means or sustenance to get themselves on their own feet. V'zeh v'zeh rabo moser lo shivcha knanit. Both of them have the ability to be married to a shivcha knanit, or the master can insist that he marries a shivcha knanit. My love, Bahaka Miflige, seems that the machloket between Rabbi Elazar and the Tanakama is this. The Tanakama lo yalif sachir sachir. The Tanakama does not have this gzer shoba sachir sachir, therefore he bifurcates the din. It says that anything that's mentioned in Dvarim and in Mishpatim belongs to Machua Beitin. Anything that's mentioned in Vayikra has to do with an Eved that sells himself into slavery. And therefore the dinim are totally separate. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, Yalif, Sakhir, Sakhir. Rabbi Elazar says the same din applies to both types of Eved Ivri. He darshins the Gzer Shava. And with the Gzer Shava, he's able to bring the dinim from one to the other. Amarav Tavyumi Mishmedu Abaye. The Kuleyama Yalif, Sakhir, Sakhir. Everybody learns this Gzer Shava, Sakhir, Sakhir. V'hochal b'hai krakam iflige. This is what they're arguing about. My time of the Tanakama. Why does the Tanakama say, Mocher Atzmo Nimkar L'Sheish V'Yeter Al-Sheish? Why is it that a Mocher Atzmo can sell himself for any duration, not limited to six? Meit Rachmana Gavi Machrua Beitin. What he's going to show now, what the Gemara is going to do now, is show you that the Tana Kama is not learning now because he doesn't have the Gzeir Shava, but rather in each instance he has a miut for that din. That din applies only here and nowhere else. So by the case of Sheshanim, it says by the person who is sold by Beitin, it says there, Vavadcha Sheshanim. He will work for you for 6 years. So what does that mean? Ze velo mocher atzmo. That is a miut. He, Abdecha Sheshanim, he will work for you for 6 years, but no one else will be capped by the 6 years. That means that if he sells himself in, then he won't be capped by it. V'idach, what does Rabbi Elazar do with that? Vadcha, lecha, velo yoresh. He has a different miut from that. What does it mean he'll work for you and no one else? It means that for you and not your inheritors. And that's what we said before, that the Eved Ivri is not passed like an inheritance. And as Rashi notes over here, that's not so clear because there are certain Yoshim that do inherit him. If it's the son of the father who steps into the shoes of his father, then the leasehold will continue, like I mentioned before. Whereas if it's other inheritors, like a brother or a daughter, then he will not be passed because they do not step into the shoes of the father. V'idach, what about that? Vavadcha achrin aktiv. The word avdcha appears twice in that parsha. And therefore, since it appears twice, I have two limudim. One to teach you only him and not his yorshim. And the other one to teach you that it's this in particular is capped by 6 years, but nobody else is capped by 6 years, meaning someone who sells himself into slavery is not capped by 6 years. The first one is, ki macher lecha achicha ivri ivriya vavadcha sheshanim. That's the original one. And at the end of the parsha, it says, ki mishneh sechar sechir avadcha sheshanim. So again, there you have again, avadcha sheshanim. So one of those is used to say that this alone is 6 years, nothing else. I want to teach you that he alone can have him, not the 6 years are terminated as soon as that adon dies and not continuing with the yorshim. V'idach ha'u arzat adon hu da'ata. That comes to teach you that the adon must give him a means to put himself on his feet, the hanaka, when he leaves, but he has to do it in good spirit. That we have to convince or placate the Adon and say why it's a good idea for him to provide this Hanukkah to the Eved. Because he's worked for you for so long, he's done double duty, he's done all these things to benefit your household, therefore you should be willingly and want to give the Eved this Hanukkah as a reward for what blessing that he has brought to your house. And that's what it means, lehartzot. We try to convince him or encourage him to do this of his own volition. There's a requirement in the Torah that when you give him that money and you give him that, you don't just throw it at him and say, take your stuff, get out of here. You have to do it in a way that is pleasant, that makes him feel that he has some self-worth to him. So that's what it means, vavadcha, that he worked for you for 6 years. Now you got to take care of him. He did his part for you. Now you do your part for him. My time of the Tanakama, damar mocher atzmo enu nirtza. How come the Tanakama says that if he sells himself into slavery, he can't extend that to the Yovel through Ritziah? Again, by the case of Machua Beitin, there's a miut which says, "V'ratza adunav et ozno b'marzeya." Ozno again here is his ozen, and that's exclusive. Ozno shelo v'lo ozno shel mocher atzmo. Only the ear of the one who Beitin has sold into slavery is this true, but not about the one who has sold himself into slavery. V'idach and Rabbi Elazar, what does he do with the word ozno? Hey, the Xerishova Udata. He needs that for the Xerishova. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. So this is right. The why you might believe that the other case was a case of Rabbi Eliezer, because here they're bringing a proof to Rabbi Elazar from Rabbi Eliezer. So if it was Rabbi Eliezer, it would make more sense that it's Lashitato. Again, Tosafot over here in the large Tosafot of Idach discusses that. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, minayin the Ritziah Shiba Ozen Yimanit. How do I know when you do Ritziah that you pierce the right ear? Nemrakan ozen, v'nemra lahanalan ozen. It says ozen, like we just saw in the Parshia and in Shmot. It says, v'ratza adunav et ozno b'marzeya b'avado l'olam. That's in Mishpatim, it says that. So that's ozno. And now he's making gzeir shava, nemra lahanalan ozen by mitzora. It also uses the term ozen. Ma lahalan yamin. Just like by the mitzora, there it specifies that it's ozen ayimanit, the right ear. Avkan yamin. So it's over here, it's the right ear. As Rashi notes over here, that's by mitzora ani. If you're in the beginning of Parshat Mitzora, it talks about the Tarata Mitzora. Over there it tells you twice how to do Tarata Mitzora, one for a rich Mitzora and one for a poor Mitzora. The Parsha just repeats identical repetition of the Parsha, which, as Rashi notes here, is completely unnecessary. The Torah just could have said, If he's the Ani, these are the korbanot that he brings in place of the Asher, and you do the same process. Instead of doing that, it spells it out. So Rashi says that entire parsha is extraneous, and we learn out from that excess words or gzeirah shavot. This is one of those gzeirah shavot of ozen, ozen. V'idach, imkein le'makra, ozen. The puzzle could have just said ozen, and you would have had that gzeirah shavot. My ozno. Why does it say ozen shalo in his particular ear? So that's to teach you that only this individual has his ozen pierced, but not the one who sells himself in. V'idach, how mi bayle ozno v'lo ozna. The other party, Rabbi Elazar, needs that to teach you that only an Eved Ivri can have his ear pierced, and Amar Vriya cannot. Ozno v'lo ozna. V'im idach nafkala. And the other one learns that, but it says, V'im yomar ha'eved. If your Eved says, I'm happy here and I want to stay, ha'eved v'lo ha'ama. There it says, the person who's speaking up there is the Eved and not the Ama. So only an Eved Ivri can extend his enslavement from 6 years to the Yovel, but not an Ama ha'ivriya. V'idach, v'ilozar, v'ibayle, that's yomar kishu Eved. So only when he makes the request while he's still an Eved. He can only make the request to extend his enslavement while he is still an Eved Ivri. If he already got to the end of the 6 years, he's no longer an Eved Ivri, he can't come to the master and say, I want to extend now. You have to do the extension while you're still an Eved Ivri, not when you've already been released, and then try to re-enslave yourself through the Ritziah. V'idach, mi'eved, ha'eved nafka. And then the Tanakam will learn that out from Eved, ha'eved, the extra hey there. So he'll learn that out that while you're still a slave. V'idach, eved ha'eved, lo darish. And then Be'elozar says that eved ha'eved is not significant enough, or that hey is not a reason to make a drusha. All right, so we're going to stop here, 9 lines down on the top of Tetvav Amud Aleph.